To understand the complex situation in Kosovo and the rest of the Balkans, it helps to put things in a historical context, to sort out some of the issues as well as the major players in the Balkan past. Nick Miller joins us. He teaches Eastern European and Balkan history at Boise State University in Idaho. Good morning, Professor Miller.
Good morning, Leanne.
I want you to take us to the 19th century, and in fact, a specific date, 1844. This is when Serbian nationalism as a political philosophy was first articulated, and it was articulated in a secret memo from the Minister of Internal Affairs to the Serbian prince, and the document was called the Nacrtanija. What was in there? Why was it secret? How did it change everything?
Ilija Garašanin, the Serbian minister that you mentioned, was putting down on paper maximal goals for the Serbian nation in the future. And this was at a time when Serbia as a state, it was autonomous at that point, but still a state, had just emerged. As all states will, that state apparatus began to define not only where Serbia should be or what it should include, but what the Serbs themselves were. It began to institute an education system. It built a military, all of which required some sort of foundation, call it in citizenship or something like that. The Nacrtanija was secret, I would suspect, because at that point Serbia simply couldn't hope to attain those goals. It envisioned a Serbia that would include Bosnia and Herzegovina. It also envisioned Serbia including portions of the Ottoman Empire, including Kosovo and Macedonia, and also eventually some territories within the Habsburg monarchy. So its secrecy, I think, is a function of the fact that none of those territories could be imagined as part of Serbia at that point, simply because Serbia was so small. The document itself was not even known to exist until, I believe, 1906. And so it's really hard to say exactly how programmatic it was, although clearly, given the 19th and 20th century history of the Serbs, it expressed, I'd say, generalized ambitions. We see very similar statements of claims made in 1990, 1991, and 1992 as the wars in former Yugoslavia began. They did propose that as Yugoslavia collapsed, Serbia should include much of the territory that was put forth in the Nacrtanija.
Do you agree with those who say that the problems in the Balkans during this century are due to the more or less artificial boundaries that were set up by the Allies after World War I?
I would say that the boundary question has been used by Serbian nationalists as a way to manipulate the Serbian population. There is some truth to it. The boundaries of Yugoslavia after the First World War, and then especially after the Second World War, were to a degree artificial. You know, some of them we can point to and say actually they're historic. The border of the Croatian Republic after 1945 largely reflected the border of Croatia in the late 19th century, the border of Bosnia as well. But when Serbs especially question the validity of borders in the modern Yugoslav state, they are usually referring to the borders that were established after 1945, which more or less defined the Serbian people as a divided people. The border of Macedonia was created after the Second World War. Other borders with Montenegro, that was also loosely historical, but also manipulated after the war. So I'd say it's a mixed bag, actually.
But World War II, you think, had a much more profound effect?
Well, when we talk about Serbs, World War II and the border situation established after that war is much more critical. The Tito regime determined that it had been Serbian nationalism, a Serbian bourgeoisie during the interwar period, that had doomed the state with its ambitions. A few border manipulations were made as an attempt to reduce the authority of Serbs throughout the state. For instance, there were places that could have been included in the Serbian Republic that were not. It was suggested that portions of Bosnia should be made part of Serbia after World War II. That was not accepted. The large Serbian population of Croatia, which had been subject to genocide under the Croats during the war, was not given autonomy in Croatia. Macedonia was created. Kosovo and Vojvodina were both made autonomous.
Some have said that a reason for not getting involved would be that this is a very old conflict. This has very deep roots. We've been talking about the history. Do you think that's true?
Well, this is the big issue. And to tell you the truth, I'm very surprised that I've been hearing it again, what with NATO involvement in Kosovo. While it's true that this is and has always been a very violent region, I don't think that we can reduce the current conflicts to history. That, to me, is a way, it's sort of a lax formulation that allows us to set it aside and say there's nothing that can be done. Europe itself has been an extremely violent place for centuries, and there are many other historical relationships between peoples of Western and Central Europe that are just as violent. Instead, I would suggest that what history has left is a reservoir of ideas and myths and facts that can be utilized by modern politicians to make this conflict understandable or even to manipulate their populations. We'd be foolish to say that this isn't a region that's been historically violent. But that in itself, I don't think, is a sufficient explanation.
Some also say that the conflict was really sort of simmering below the surface up until communism collapsed. And they were just, you know, waiting for this to happen, for the overthrow of communist rule would free all of these, conflicts. Do you think that's true?
I think that there's something to that. After Tito died in 1980, Serbian people began to express themselves more clearly, and they had some very valid grievances against the Tito regime. What began, for instance, after 1980, after Tito's death, as a free speech movement, gradually coalesced around territorial issues, because for Serbs, unlike for the other people of Yugoslavia, Titoism's crime was, in fact, territorial. That it had resulted in, or Tito had called for, the dispersion of the Serbian people in different republics and provinces. With Tito's death and with the collapse of communism, it was this movement, this gradual coalescence around the idea that it was the territorial effects of Titoism that were so bad for Serbs, that allowed a politician like Slobodan Milosevic, who emerged as communism was collapsing in Eastern Europe, to focus on those issues as a way of building and ultimately maintaining his own authority.
Do you think it's possible to look at the past and predict the future?
Predicting the future scares me. Historians have the safety valve. You know, they don't have to do that. We leave it to political scientists. But I think that we can look at the past and predict the future to a degree. What's happening in the Southeast European region is the final working out of nations and borders. Ethnic cleansing, a very common phrase, we hear it regularly now, a very brutal process, is, again, just a function of nations finally achieving borders that are potentially, anyway, and those nations hope, are the same as the borders of their ethnic group or nation. And while it's very depressing for me to say this, I do think that ultimately the conflicts in the Balkans are going to end when, or at least temporarily end, when some sort of ethnic borders are achieved. Now, that doesn't mean that in the future, historical memories aren't going to step in and once again revive the type of hostility we've seen. For instance, if Kosovo were to become independent and an Albanian state, or even part of Albania, I would predict, and I think there's all sorts of historical logic to support this, that the Serbs are not going to simply let it go. I mean, their attachment to Kosovo today is mythical and cultural and certainly not ethnic because it's not ethnically Serbian. And so there's no reason to expect Serbs to accept its separation from Serbia in the future.
Nick Miller teaches at Boise State University in Idaho. He's also the author of Between Nation and State, Serbian Politics in Croatia Before the First World War. He joined us from member station KBSU. Thank you very much, Professor Miller.
Thank you, Leanne.